failure. It's really, really fantastic. I'm very excited, I'm sure as you all are, to finally hear the new songs. And we are very fortunate today to be able to sit down with Natasha. I call her Natasha, she's my friend. So we're very lucky to talk to Natasha today and catch up with her and see how she's doing. Hi there, Natasha.
Hi, Gil.
How you been?
I'm good. It's nice to talk to you.
I know. We're on different coasts now, of course. We're both in New York, and you're still over there. So I definitely miss you very much. It's good to talk to you and catch up.
Did I?
And, of course, thank you. And you just released Luxury of Failure, and it's totally fantastic. I have it on repeat throughout the day, listening to it since you released it. It's been, what, a week or two now ago?
Yeah, it's been about almost 2 weeks, but you really new.
Awesome. And I remember even a few years ago when you were working on it, you just had a few slices, a few demos of the tracks, and you played for me, and I was very lucky to hear them. And it's really cool to hear the whole complete work now done and completed. So just wanted to find out a little bit more about the process of how, when you started working on those demos those years ago until now, and what brought you to the final piece, the final work that we hear now, compared with back then when you're just starting out?
Yeah, it was a bit of a journey. I kind of went in and started this record, I guess, head first. I didn't really have a great plan in place. I have a really great collaborator, a drummer named Jason Lawrence out of New York. So I was lucky to, in the initial stages, start to develop a lot of the songs and the drums and the whole tempo around each piece or each track. So we did a lot of that at the New School. He works at the New School, so we got to kind of crash the rehearsal space there and work through it. And then after that, we hit Hudson and booked about a week of studio time there. And I had never recorded to 2-inch tape before, and I wanted to make this album different and have something a little more tactile, something a little different than Bitch Get Fit. And I thought the best way to do that would be to start in a different space, and recording to analog tape felt like the right thing to do. And I didn't realize, though, how different and difficult it is from just using Pro Tools or Logic. It's a whole different process. So we spent about a week there, and we just got the pretty much the drums, the pianos, and the strings laid there, and it created this great foundation, I think, for everything else to be layered upon. That got done there, and then there was a bit of time between when I picked the project up again, and that was done. I did the vocals at Avatar New York. And then after that, I went to Brooklyn, friends of Jason, this guy named Josh Kaufman, and this guy named Jim Smith, amazing guys. And we were in this kind of basement studio space in Dumbo, which was super creative. And we just laid all the instrumentals, the guitar, the a lot of different toys were laid, like Echoplex and a lot of pocket piano. Josh is a wizard at all that stuff. He's really amazing. And then after that, I picked up and connected with this guy. His name is Ross. And we ended up mixing at Carriage House in Connecticut. So it's kind of traveled. And Carriage House was kind enough to allow me to mix my record there, and they're super amazing. It's a super amazing space in Connecticut, Stamford, Connecticut, and if anyone gets a chance to go there and record, it's amazing. You can stay there, it's just a special space, you know? So we finished the mixing there and then mastered it there, and then the rest is history. So it's been done for maybe about 8 months, and then in the time since, I've just been trying to figure out everything from like the art direction, the title, the distribution, and all that stuff. But it was a well-traveled process, and I was so frustrated at times that it wasn't getting done fast enough for my own liking. But sometimes in life, you kind of have to just be patient, and you never know what mistake might lead to a breakthrough. And having the record now, I love it. I really do. Sure, there's things that I would be like OCD about and change or whatever, but I feel really lucky that I got to meet people like Josh and Jason and people at the Carriage House and really finish it in such a good way. So, yeah, it was well-traveled, that's for sure. Luxury of failure.
It sounds like it. And it was over a few years, right?
Yeah, the whole thing took about 2.5 years to finish. If I put all the time together in studio, it would have been maybe 3 months. But just with budgets and the cost of making a record, and also I wanted to, I guess I could have released it sooner and done the mixing and like really, really quickly, and I guess I could have had it done, but I really wanted it to be as perfect as possible. And I think if I rushed the mixing, or I didn't do Brooklyn, or I didn't do Carriage House in Connecticut, I don't think I would have turned out the way it is. So I'm really happy that I felt the pressure of delivering to people, because it had been such a long time since I started, and there were a couple amazing fans that pre-ordered the record, and I wanted to make sure they got it. I felt bad letting people down and keep on delaying the release, but I also didn't want to give them something that wasn't as good as it could have been. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I stuck it through.
Us fans who know you by now definitely appreciate that. As I said before, it was definitely worth the wait. And I mean, I think a lot of artists, you know, they have different ways of writing and putting records together. And time, like you said, can affect sometimes the work as far as influencing how some tracks are tweaked or, you know, changed here and there. And it can change really the whole vibe, I think, of the album. But even with all that considered, like you said, it picked up a lot of miles. It picked up a lot of time. But it's actually a very cohesive album. Like I said, when I say I put on repeat, I mean, when I sit down and listen to it, it's at least twice I listen to the whole album in a row.
Aww.
And it's all very, like, you know, it's like a complete work that tells the story and stays together, even though so many things have happened, obviously, over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
And I like that, and I think other people besides me appreciate that.
Thank you. That was the intention from the start. There was a couple of songs that didn't make it because they just didn't get finished. But the whole intention from the first days of me and Jason kind of pounding through the ideas at New School was this is the track that might start the album. This is the storyline. This is the last track. Like, it had that. It's also like Bitch Get Fit. Like, it has that arc. And, you know, I would love to have like another Find Love on this album and have some sort of TV placement or response to a track. But I grew up in the days of records, right? Like, full on, this is the CD, like, you know what I mean? Like, you listen to like the whole record. And I had an older brother who, you know, got Columbia House. So I grew up with that sort of, you know,
totally,
listening to the first to the last. And I know that right now it's all about singles or ringtones, and I understand that and I appreciate that, but I also want to be true to, you know, the beauty of a story and the beauty of a full record, and I hope that I did that.
You did, and I think it was, I don't know, maybe Slash, I heard him say years ago in some interviews saying that if you look, let's say, at a piece of artwork on the wall, whether it's a painting or photograph, and you only look at, you know, one section of it, that's kind of like just listening to one track or just hearing a few singles here and there. But you want to see the whole piece, right? You want to look at the whole picture and see really what the story the artist is telling. And that's what I think this album definitely does, even though, you know, you said it had some traction, but I think it was good traction of the pieces that influenced, I think, over the years to the final album.
Thanks.
Yeah. It seems, though, that, you know, Bitch Get Fit was obviously, it was also a powerhouse album, and it seems that Bitch Get Fit had a few more up-tempo tracks than Luxury of Failure.
Yeah.
And even you know, your previous albums, you know, Behind Your Back, In Your Face, and you just hear the titles, and that's like, you know, it's harder hitting Bitch Get Fit, you know, In Your Face. And then you get to now, and it's Luxury of Failure. So I'm wondering what's kind of the feelings over the past, I guess, 10 years or so since those albums, you know, have been released from then until now.
That's a good question. It is a different, like, I'm just thinking about In Your Face and Behind Your Back, and then Bitch Get Fit, and they all had, at least within Your Face, it had a couple more up-tempos, like Overdrawn and Code Red and Spin, and even on Spin on Bitch Get Fit and Young Love. And yeah, it's true. It was a little more up-tempo. I don't know. When I went into making the record, it was like really close to the time that my dad passed away. And I think I was just in a different headspace. And so a lot of the stuff that I was either writing or committing to recording, because you write all kinds of stuff, right? And some stuff works for you, some stuff doesn't. And I guess the stuff that I wanted to keep and record was a little more melancholy. And just living in New York for 10 years and pounding the pavement, and, you know, anyone who's tried to do this as a career fully understands the sacrifices you make, the choices you make, and you don't always end up, you know, there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees in life, but I think when you go out as an artist, it's a hammer fight. You know, you don't know where your gigs are coming from. You don't know whatever. So I think that on top of my dad and New York City, I was just in a different headspace, like a little more, you know, like what's the next step? Like, where do I take this? And is my stuff meaningful? You know, just not to get too philosophical or cheesy or something, but I think I was just in that headspace, and I didn't feel like putting out something a little more poppy. There was one song that was way, way poppy, but we never ended up finishing it, and it didn't fit with the mix. You know, I kind of felt like if it was in the mix, it kind of would have been like, here's the single, or here's the, you know, I guess Burn is as upbeat as it gets, or Little Victories, yeah, maybe, but it just didn't feel like it was authentic, you know, and I guess with every record I've done, I've really tried to get it out into the more mainstream, but I've also kind of stuck to, I guess, being true to myself. Does that make sense? I don't know. You make so many sacrifices, but then I guess when it comes to, if you're producing your own work, you kind of have to stand by it as opposed to be someone that you're not and have to pretend to promote something that you kind of maybe sort of don't love, you know? So it's easier to talk about it and be super proud of it. And I guess it just didn't have that, whatever. It's a way more melancholy album, like, just from the start, and the way it feels, even when we were recording it, it just has that feeling. So, yeah. Does that answer the question?
It does.
I don't know.
But you know, I think even in your previous albums, this, to me, it seems like the one thing that says NLX throughout all of them, because there are of course melancholy tracks on your previous albums, but there seems to be a tint of optimism in there somewhere if you listen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, dark hope, I guess. And, or, yeah.
Yeah, it's like from the dark into the light. You know, it's like
yeah.
looking down that way. And even, you know, the title of the album, Luxury of Failure, one might think, oh my gosh, you know, what happened to Natasha?
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's
she funny. Would come to this conclusion or something. But to me, it's almost like you said, it's being really introspective. And that's in the tracks. You just listen to a lot of them, you can feel it. And you can sense it of kind of thinking about yourself, what you've done, where you come so far. And not just introspective, but even like, extroversion, like there's so much has happened, I think, in our world over
yeah.
the past 10 years, you know, so many changes and things moving so fast, you're like, wow, how can any of us keep up, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, obviously the record business, we're still trying to figure out where this is going, and everybody's trying to like get it organized, but this is kind of a free-for-all for now. And like you said, it's, you know, people are just buying single tracks or ringtones, you know, pieces of music, and you're like, nah, you gotta hear the whole thing. You gotta really connect, you know, with the vibe that the music and the artist is bringing. What are they saying about not just themselves, but, you know, about our society and what's going on? And I think that's really where, you know, people like me, the fans, kind of connect and relate to the music. And it's, you know, whether it takes 1 year, 3 months, or 3 years, it's gonna hold its water because of it. It just feels like, yeah, I know what Natasha is saying. I feel it, and I feel the same way.
Thank you. And that means a lot, you know. I'm not Adele. I'm not making Adele numbers. So when one or two people kind of have something that they connect with, and it's the same with like In Your Face, when that song Stay, that just, I had so many people come, like girls would come up to me and be like, I connect with that. And it really is meaningful, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, totally. It's tough, you know. I'm not in New York anymore, but I know it's, you know, certain environments kind of don't really lend a hand to support, you know, the artist lifestyle. It's tough over there. And I think, you know, a lot of artists in many other cities also have similar challenges, so they might
yeah.
also understand where you're coming from. And that's what I like you said, you kind of stick true to yourself, and this is what you've been through, and here it is, and here I am, you know?
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think it was Mark Twain or someone said, write what you know. And I guess
yeah.
you just got to write what you know, and write, and whether that's however it comes out, I think people can sense whether you're full of shit or not, or whether you're, you know, and if you write from the heart, whether you're, it's a good song or not, I think you'll always get, you know, a thumbs up from people. If it's like anything in life now, like people can, at least with me, you can, or maybe it's just age, I don't know, you can usually gauge if it's authentic or not. And I think that even in this crazy time of social media and smoke and mirrors and Instagram and all that craziness, I think you can still kind of see what's been doctored or PR'd, or, you know, you can still navigate what's authentic versus trash, you know?
Definitely, yeah. So we're all very happy to definitely, like I said, hear the album. It's fantastic, and I'm wondering if you're going to be going on tour anytime soon?
Yeah. So I did the first three record release shows. I did New York Rockwood, which was great. You were missed. You should have been there.
I should have, you're right.
But it was really good. And it was really nice to play at the Rockwood, like release it there. That's kind of where I started playing in New York, in room 1. And now I just did room 3. And it's amazing to see how that place has kind of changed. And then I did a release show in Toronto, and then I did a release show in my hometown, Hamilton. And then last night I played another gig opening for Joseph Arthur, and that was fun. And then now I'm, now being December, I'm just kind of regroup and figure out where to take it in the new year. So hopefully in the new year, I'm going to definitely go California. I'm going to do Austin and do a couple other places across the states. Like, I'd like to hit the places I hit before. And then hopefully go across Canada, just do a couple dates and definitely hit Montreal again and maybe head out to Calgary. And yeah, just do like maybe 20 dates or so, something nice and nice and rounded. I don't know. It could be good. So that's my plan. Yeah, so like definitely. February, March time.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. I mean, if you're going to come to the West Coast, then I'll fly down to, or fly up to wherever you're going to be.
Maybe I'll come to Portland. I'll do Portland. I'll do Seattle. I did Seattle before. I've never played Portland, but hey, I'll do Portland.
Yeah, you should.
That would be awesome.
Definitely dig your vibe. I did play your music here through a local radio station, and people are really digging it. You know, I got some phone calls in. So
yay.
I think if you come by, people will definitely welcome you with open arms. It's a good vibe over here.
That's awesome. That's super awesome.
Come on down.
That would be lovely.
Well, thanks for your time, Natasha. It was great talking to you and catching up as always. And, yeah, I miss you. So either way, when I go to New York or you come here, we'll catch up soon.
Yeah. Thanks for your support always, you know. Always, always.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Take care. And I'll see you soon.
Okay, Gil. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.